Good evening. Good evening. Let's start with a serenity prayer, shall we? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome to our Longtimers Power Circle dinner. I hope you're all having a wonderful time this weekend. Before I turn it over to our famous or infamous Jack and Terrell, I just wanted to make one quick announcement. If you have not picked up your reduced parking pass and you need that, we will be doing that after this evening. So please make sure you get that from Christian. Christian, raise your hand. Right there. Okay. Make sure you do that after we end for tonight, before you leave. Okay? Thank you.
Hi, I'm Terrell. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Let's see. Welcome to the... my opinion to call this was dinner with the old people. You know, you're welcome, hon. I know. Well, if you have, like, 25 years or more of abstinence, you're going to be... You know, you're going to be at least 50. At least 50. Well, I mean, no, actually, not true. I would know. Anyway. So this is, I get to tell you a little bit of why I think I, oh no, I get to, get up here, Jack. You're my co-chair. Jeez, this has been all the entire time. You can't get a response to do anything right. Who? Turn your microphone.
Thank you, Richie, 1984.
So Jack and I are the co-chairs on this. We want to welcome
hello,
to the dinner.
Hello, hello.
So... This, hope you have a good time tonight. I know it's a bunch of old people, and we're being irreverent, and whatever. And I know I'm going to get a lot of stares from my back right now. Oh, okay. I'll speak into the microphone. Yeah, I know. Listen, it was hard for everyone to stay up. Anyway, oh. Okay, we're going to start off with Jack. He's going to share a little bit of what it was like, and he better use my name once or twice in his reason why he's staying absent so long since I'm his sponsor. Jack?
How about you put $1 into the pot for every time I use your name? Okay? Oh, you'll regret that. Okay, I'm Jack. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Jack.
Hi. What we're going to do is I'm going to just tell you this many minutes of what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, and a little bit about my two cents on how to maintain or attain a long-term recovery from my experience only. And by the way, all of us, 10 of us on the panel, we're speaking about our own experience. Hold it up over here, right? Okay, so I've been coming to program for a week or two ago was 32 years. And when I first came in, if you're new and your experience doesn't feel like it's the mainstream, it doesn't matter. I really did, when I got in, called three men in the program and asked them what to do to attain what they had. And one of them said, just get your food in order and everything will be fine. And I figured, that sounds like what I had been trying to do for years before. Somebody said, get right by God and everything will be fine. And then the other guy said, this is all the truth. The third guy said, work the steps and everything will be fine, which only confused me. But you know what? My experience was that first day I walked into Beverly Hills High School in January 5th, 1982, I wrote down on a piece of paper what I hoped my food plan to be. And in those days, I really thought recovery was about, again, food plan, because I came from dieting probably since I was 8 or 9 years old. My top weight was 305 pounds. I lost 100 pounds twice. I enjoyed doing it so much the first time that I gained it all back and took up a few other vices. Habits, and then gained it all back. But what's really, I've been blessed. I came in the first day, my food got in order. And my dad, who passed away almost 2 years ago now, was an accountant. And I am the adult child of a Jewish accountant. And it's not pretty. And what he said to me, so let me get this straight. You walked in on January 5th, 1982, and you couldn't stop compulsively overeating. Yes. And then on January 6th, you woke up and you could stop compulsively overeating. Yes, Dan. And you're going to tell me that there's about a disease and then there was God involved and all this stuff. And I said, yes. He said, it doesn't make sense. And I said, I agree, but that's exactly what happened. So I went home after the meeting in Beverly Hills High School, and I did what some people may do, is I stopped one time, just one time, well, one item at each of the 10 times I stopped between Beverly Hills High School and Wilshire and 9th Street in Santa Monica where I lived. And it one last item, either just a little bag of M&Ms or a little bag of potato chips. Just, they were 25 cents, about 140 calories. I counted calories very methodically in those days, like to the calorie. One of my diets in the olden days, literally 800 calories a day. And then you stop eating. And I was doing it with bagels and M&Ms. And I was stopping when I was done with 800 calories, which sometimes happened at like 7:30 in the morning. And then it's a bitch to keep going through from 7:30 in the morning to like 11 o'clock at night. So about 20 years ago, I asked Terrell to be my sponsor. And my understanding... Oh, that's a dollar. That's one of them. Terrell. That's two. So what I do today, to be honest with you, in the last 2.5 years, I've taken up a couple of new things. I hadn't called in, written in my food in for about 25 years. On a daily basis, I write my food in. Every day, haven't missed a day in 2.5 years. I call my sponsor probably 4.5 of the 5 weekdays, and I talk to him almost every Saturday. I write probably, I'd say, 85-90% of the days. I read, I write, and I call him. And this is after 32 years. And you know what? It keeps me coming back. I've never stopped. Two things. I got blessed about the abstinence. That was just my story. It got clean very quickly. I don't know why I do it. I don't know. What else is? I've never left. That's the other thing. I've never left. Now, I, fortunately, have never wanted to leave. I had nowhere else to go. I mean, most of the places I used to go to didn't want me back. And you guys kept saying, keep coming back. And for real, you know, you burn a lot of bridges when you've gone up 100 pounds, down 100 pounds. You screw up careers. You screw up relationships. You just screw up. I mean, that was the theme for the first 30 years of my life. I've always had a sponsor. I had one for 6 years. It was magnificent and perfect for 6 years. And then we kind of hated each other and fired each other. Then I had a second sponsor for 6 more years. And the number of time or days I went between times without a sponsor, I'm guessing might have been at most, 2 to 3 weeks. And it wasn't because I didn't ask people, and it wasn't because I didn't try. But I always had a sponsor. And I always go to meetings. I've never wanted to leave. It doesn't matter whether you want to go. It doesn't matter whether I want to go or not want to go, is I go. The other thing that Terrell's added, maybe more so in the last 5 years than before, is to always be of service. Always be of service. When I got in 1982, there was a time between 82 and 83 where there were 116 meetings a week. And now we have much less. So in summary... work the 12 steps, the tools, and I am really powerless over food. And what the last 20 years has been about is the 11th step. And I'll get back to that another time, but Terrell's been really helpful in pointing me towards the 11th step and the God stuff. And he'll talk, believe me, a whole lot more about that stuff.
That's there was Terrell. A little sign down there that said, time's up, follow directions.
Oh. Now, hold on. Let me switch hats. 5 times? Thank you. Terrell, no pressure. I will give you $1 for every minute you don't use my name. Now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, who will tell you about his experience, strength, and hope. I am Jack, the compulsive overeating warm-up act for my sponsor, Terrell.
Oh, don't applause. It just humors him. Or encourages him, I should say. Let's see. My name is Terrell. I'm a compulsive overeater. For some unknown reason, Jack and I both share the same abstinent day, not date. I'm January 6, 1979, so I have 35 years of abstinence. So, and my top weight is around 325 pounds. So I get to say in 5 minutes, why do I think I've been absent for so long? When I came in, I'd look at the old timers, and those people had 5 or 10 years, you know. I'd look at them and go, like, what is it? What is it? Because I want what they want. I want what they, that long-term absence. I don't know if I wanted all that spiritual recovery they had. I just wanted to have the ego gratification saying I have 35, you know, have a long time. But I think the reason why I believe I'm stayed absent for so long is the one chapter of our big book really, really, really speaks to me. And just, it's like my favorite chapter in the entire big book. So I guess using literature, that might be one of the reasons I'm staying absent so long, is the doctor's opinion. The doctor's opinion, in my humble opinion, or for me, I should say for me, is that it explains to me that I have this disease, that I have this brain that really seeks comfort in excess food, that I eat because I like the way it makes me feel, not because I like the results it does to my body, not because it tastes good, but I like the results, I like what it does to my brain. And it made me, and by accepting that, and basically the first step, right, that says, you know, I'm powerless over food, it kind of like really made me go like, oh, I need to go find something. I need to find something. And I mean, when I was 5 years absent, I mean, Lord knows we all have stories now. We all have stories now when we go like, well, when I was, you know, back in 1987, I was abstinent. Or when I was, you know, we can all do that, you know. Oh, you should have seen the program when we came in. Oh, it was like, you know, we didn't have cell phones. We couldn't text in food. We had to go to a payphone, you know. Payphone. And you'd call your sponsor and get a busy signal, you know. I mean, we were willing, not like you youngins these days. Oh, I touched in my food. Okay. You know.
He walked to meetings uphill both ways. Right? In the snow in Los Angeles and Houston.
Anyway, so, I mean, I believe that the secret to my long-term absence is I really believe that I'm different. I really have this core belief that I will never, ever, ever have a normal relationship with food. That I will never, ever eat like a normal person. That I'm got this brain, and it says science hasn't fixed it yet. And I watch the morning news every morning, and they still haven't found a solution to my brain. They have found physical ways to get rid of fat, like, you know, stomach stapling, new things that comes out. But they haven't got rid of things that makes my brain from lighting up when it comes to German chocolate cake, right? My brain lights up when it comes to German chocolate cake. Like heroin lights up, you know, and that's what makes me a compulsive overeater, right? I mean, a heroin addict doesn't light up when they see German chocolate cake. They light up when they see heroin. You know, my sister, who was a heroin addict, said she used to get, like, start salivating when she sees people shoot up in movies. Yeah, okay, so I got the same thing, except I look at commercials, you know. anyway, so that's my secret to long-term abstinence. When I was about 5 years abstinent, I was going through a hell of a time. And I was praying. I was like, in this horrible, dark moment. And I said, God, I do not understand why I have to go through this. I do not get it. But I make a commitment to you, God, that I will abstain to get to the other side so I can figure out what's going on. Because I can't figure out anything when I'm in my food. Because all I can do is like, oh, that hurts. Oh, I'm going to go eat food. Oh, that's uncomfortable. Oh, I'm going to go get my food. Oh, I've got to go get my food. There's no growth growing through. There's no process. So I really believe that the reason why I've been absent for so long is I know the alternative is if I go eat, I am going to the toilet. Not puking, but going to the toilet. You know, I'm destined for hell. I'm destined for death. A living, walking hell. So I have a clear-cut choice in my mind. Either I abstain or I go to hell. And the only way I know how to keep from binging my brains out is to work a 12-step program. Anyway, I think I'm it. That, Jack, it's your turn now.
Well, let's thank Terrell for... That's another dollar. I just love doing that. Okay, well, that means I have $5? I'll see your five. Okay, now what we're going to do, apparently, you were going to explain this, but you want to?
Sure.
What we're going to do now is each one of our panel members is going to share for about 2 minutes as to why they think they've stayed absent for so long. What is it about them that, or their program, whatever. And then we will open up for questions and answers. And it's going to be a quick Q&A session. Or is it me?
Yeah, no. The other thing is, if you want before they go, just to let you know, we're going to pass these baskets around. If you don't want to ask a question or be seen asking a question, you can write the question and we'll bring it up and we'll read it, number one. Number two, if you want to just go up to that microphone in the back there, especially the people right around there, that's one way we'll do it. And the other way is that I'll be walking around for these tables over here. If you don't want to get up, just raise your hand, let me know, and we'll take the questions. Okay? So, right? And do not identify yourself. It becomes a whole big Megillah on the taping. So don't, you know, get it. Right? Is that good, Sherry? Okay, Sherry. I want to make sure. Okay?
Okay, so I just handed a live mic to Gail. So that means you're first.
Okay. Now?
Now.
Hi, I'm Gail. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm a 100-pounder.
Hey,
hello. Thank you, Jack, for asking me to speak for 2 minutes.
Gail.
Pardon me? 1 more minute left. Okay, so on February 21st, I'll have 25 years of abstinence. I am, thank you, and I'm down 120 pounds from my top weight, which is 265, and the way I stay abstinent is I don't overeat. What I did is when I came in, I picked up a pen and put down the food. That's what I did. And I'm a big proponent of writing. And I have a saying that I do not hurt myself with food no matter what. I could tattoo it on my forehead. I do not hurt myself with food. So over the years, I have worked with sponsors and have worked the steps. We did not have OA literature when we started, so I used the AA literature, the big book, and the AA 12 and 12, and wrote on every sentence of the books. And then when we finished those books, the OA books came out and wrote on every sentence of those books, and all the Al-Anon books, and all the books, and just kept on going. And meanwhile, I email my food before I eat it every morning, and I email the actual at night. I do that after 25 years, and that's what I do for my program. I have a food sponsor, and I go to very few meetings at this point, but I do service by speaking when I'm asked, and that's my program. And life has changed a lot, but I had to put down the fork and pick up the pen. That was the biggest thing that happened for me, is I cannot work the steps if I'm eating. That's what, in my belief. So that's what I did, and here I am today, and pretty happy life. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Bobby. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater. Right now, I have 39 years of abstinence, and I say that because one day at a time, it has been through the grace of God that I have maintained a weight loss of 45 pounds, something like that. I want to be abstinent every day of my life for the rest of my life, one day at a time. When I came into these rooms 120 years ago, I hated myself. I had no self-worth. I had no self-esteem. I was a child. I was not an adult. 39 years later, with the grace of God, with the gift of willingness one day at a time for spiritual, emotional, and physical abstinence, I pray for that every morning. Those are the first words I ask. I ask for willingness each and every morning to be spiritually, emotionally, and physically abstinent. I choose life because God has given me the gift of willingness to be abstinent. I don't want to run away from my life. I want to live it, feel it, experience everything. And that is not what I did 39 years ago, binging my brains out. I have a spiritual, emotional, and physical malady. And for me, the physical is just one part of it. I pray 24 hours a day. I live my life with a conscious contact with God, as I call him. I read spiritual literature. I do not go to many meetings anymore. I haven't sponsored in quite a while. I write, and I choose with the gift of willingness from God, one day at a time, to live my life and be a very happy, full individual because I'm living my life today. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Zan, compulsive overeater. Hi, everybody. If I don't pick up the food by February 1st, I'll celebrate 33 years of abstinence. And I'm maintaining about a 45-pound weight loss. And probably the most honest answer is I have no idea why I'm still abstinent after all these years. And, you know, over time, I've looked around, like, you know, why me? And why not all these other people? Not all these other, because there are a lot of people abstaining. We're all abstaining right now. That's the bottom line. But, you know, I mean, it took me 5 years to get abstinent. Why that? You know, and why people who I see work so hard and who can't get abstinent or can't stay abstinent. So I'm very comfortable in not knowing the answers. But I will tell you this. What I think even more than that, that I'm abstinent today because I hit bottom and because I overate and I ate and I ate. Why am I abstinent this long? Because of the food, because of the food, because of the food. The food did everything for me. It took me down to that place where I was willing to do anything. And I believe that the answer to the program is to follow your sponsor's instructions. And I have the old form of the how it works, one of the way it was originally written, and it used to say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our instructions. Or thoroughly followed Terrell's instructions. And so, you know, it was like harsher back then. So that's it. I ate before program and in program. And I thought it was the last binge, and it wasn't the last binge. And I had to have an... So that's what... And pure fear is why... We used to have a term, healthy fear. I have a healthy fear of the food. And that just means... And I'll just share this and then end that... I believe I'm as powerless over food today as the day I walked into the door 37 years ago. And as long as I stay there, I'm okay.
Hi, I'm Seppi, compulsive overeater. I'm usually her warm-up act on February 1st. So assuming I, too, do it one day at a time, it should be 27 years for me.
Thank you.
I think I've managed to stay abstinent. Combination of things you guys said. Sorry. Thanks, Tara. Probably, you're not going to believe my saying this, but I think it's actually easy. I feel like that, you know, God says, okay, I feel like I have a deal with him. And I walked in here an atheist, so I don't come by the term God too liberally or too easily. But I feel like... I learned from people who were very, very strict in AA, and it was one little thing. What little thing are you willing to give up? And then God meets me more than halfway. So in the beginning for me, it was one extra bite that I did not have. I know this isn't about that, but I think I don't think about God. I didn't meditate. I still don't meditate. I like spin. I don't think about God. What are you taking me through this? I just get through the day, and I think it's the instructions for how to live life are crystal clear. There's actually no ambiguity. And I just kind of go hour by hour sometimes. And then all of a sudden, things like action is the magic word is a part of my life. Now, I have no idea when it happened, if it was year 4, 5, 20, 25. I don't know. But that's how it happened for me, not thinking about it, not meditating on it, just being like a nervous Nelly who just gets through one day at a time. And then with every little bit that I did contrary to what I thought I ought to do, I got something completely different and disproportionately good in return. And that's the only way I've strung along these days.
Hi, I'm David, compulsive overeater. And, you know, I have no idea. I thought when I was first here, my first year, I kept saying, why am I still here? And so many people in the first year weren't. And you know what? And I've talked to a lot of old timers now, and we all work our programs so different. So there isn't a one way. It's just, but I'm still here. I keep coming back. I started when I was 15 years old. I went to my first meeting when I was 13 years old. My mom took me to a few meetings. But I started coming in June of 1976. I was 15 years old. I was just starting high school. And I really think, I was talking to some people at the table at dinner, I didn't think OA was going to be it for me. It was something my mom did. It was a diet. But I really wanted to change my life. I was starting high school, and I thought, I'm going to be dead, you know, by the time I'm 20 from, I was so obese and all this stuff. And I really thought, you know, maybe OA will help me not gain weight. That's all I wanted, to stop gaining weight. And here I'm around. I started calling in my food in October of 1976. And so I have over 37 years of abstinence now. I got involved after a year in service. I helped start a second teen meeting. I got involved in the LA Intergroup. I've kept doing service. I've done service at all levels of OA. I do service now at meeting level. So I shouldn't say up and down, but I've done everything. And there's, as long as I'm doing some service, it's keeping me grounded. It's keeping me remembering. Sharing at a meeting keeps me remembering that I'm a compulsive overeater. I remember, and I don't do it perfect. And that's another reason why I think I'm still here. I can have a big meal. I can make a mistake, and I just keep coming back, and I just put one foot in front of the other. And I'm still here. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Spencer, and I'm a very grateful compulsive overeater. And before I say anything, I'm a big crybaby, so I just want to don't get nervous. I want to welcome the newcomers. If there's anybody here that's new to OA or just coming back or any retreads, welcome. I'm so glad you're here, and I'm so glad all of you are here tonight. One commercial, quick. I don't know. Was it you, Terrell? Said the old people. I mean, I see some beautiful women up here. I am getting excited. You girls are hot. You look better than you did 36 years ago. Anyway, as you get older, you get a little more lecherous, I think, is all that happens. That seems to be what abstinence is doing for me, anyway. But I'm going to leave the jokes to the jokesters. You guys were great. I loved it. I live about 90 miles north of here in a little burg called Santa Barbara, and I came down here today. It's a miracle I'm up here today. I'm just awed by the way a power greater than myself works in my life, how he's guided me to the ever-loving arms of Overeaters Anonymous. I came in here a mess, tried everything up, down, and all around. But as I remember from a show 34 years ago, I'm still here. Remember Len Magnus doing a show, I'm still here. And, here they come. The most quintessential thing I've done is to keep coming back. And thanks for the laugh.
Lonnie, compulsive overeater. I love it when the handsome old guys next to me cry. I just love it, you know. Thank the lich. I'm not sure why I... To put that in... Why am I still... One, you can't get rid of me. And the truth... The terror that I had when I got here, when I came here, February 28th will be 28 years abstinent. And the terror, thank you, that I felt when I walked in, I never want that again. When I was in high school, there was a group of really ugly girls that wanted to beat me up. I don't know why they didn't beat me up, because I could have been had, but they didn't know it because I was a good bluffer. nothing compared to the terror that I felt when I came in here. I never want that again. I'm down about 150 pounds. I'm moving in the right direction very slowly. Still moving in the right direction, though. So there's still a little bit there. But that's just the weight numbers part. I wake up every morning and I accept the gift. And there's a lot in the gift. Hopefully I'll get a chance to talk about that later before my tomb, later on as we go around. But I accept the gift and I almost laugh when I get the gift. Because it's another day above dirt. Okay? I came in, I'm a late bloomer, I'm 70 right now, and the gift is still being given. So, thank you.
Hi, my name is Judy. I'm a compulsive overeater. Hi. I feel at this point I should just say ditto, because I do everything that's been mentioned. I came for the vanity and stayed for the sanity. In truth, I thought I was going to be here for 6 months and be a prom queen and leave. And November 22nd of this year will be 40 years I've been here. And I'm still here. And 80 pounds lighter and ecstatic. But I really thought there was nothing wrong with me except that I was fat. And getting abstinent got me to see a whole bunch of other things that I really had to deal with if I wanted to stay on this path. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, well, I keep coming back because I never want to go back. And the truth is, I knew how to be a fat lady. I'd been a fat lady the first 30 years of my life. So I could probably do that again. But what has kept me coming back is you guys turned me on to something to go toward. You know, this life of surrender, cease fighting everything and everyone, being around people who have a common compassion for how hard this is. I mean, we talked about things today in the marathon that people would, in the real world, would say, what? You know, talking about the struggle and how difficult it is. Nobody out there understands. They say, push yourself away from the table, you know. But in here, people said, they're there. We know how hard it is. And you've been comforting me and petting me and healing me. And I cannot tell you what works. It has happened to me by my just showing up and by osmosis. I thank you.
Okay, we're going to have questions now. Thank everybody, the whole panel. How about that?
Right, that's what these little baskets are about.
Are for, yeah, write down any questions
it's
you have.
It's not the seventh tradition. No.
And if we have one, newcomers need not put in. Old-timers, please don't take out.
Right.
Okay. If you don't
mind, old-timers put in $1 for every year they're abstinent. Yeah.
Oh, like Carol said. So if you'd like to go to the microphone and ask a question, please feel free. And then between those, we've got some already coming in. Please pass the baskets around. And if anybody has any questions and they'd rather not be seen asking them, keep them clean, any of those things. So go up to the mic, and we'll start with those.
I have a question.
Oh, Carol, would you like to ask a question?
Yeah. So did any of you on day one of your abstinence think that you would be staying abstinent this long?
No.
Okay. Just kind of throw that out there, that if you're kind of struggling or thinking like, oh, my God, we got these old-timers, I would never be abstinent that long. I couldn't possibly be abstinent that long. Who thought that?
Well, I just wanted to say that what was really, really helpful to me is how they said, stop worrying about all that. It's just one day at a time. And can you make it? My sponsor said, nobody dies of starvation between lunch and dinner. You know, can you make it another 15 minutes? And that's how it was. I would never think of years.
Anybody who wants? Anybody who wants? No? Carla, you
want to... Hi, yes. I have this problem that I'm going to admit. I hate to write. I'm a little dyslexic, and I don't enjoy it. And if I ask some, fellows for advice, sometimes they say, well, write about it. I write about it. And, you know, besides feeling less than, does anybody relate or anybody have some solutions on that? Thank you.
I would just say that I think we all overdo it here, and that my first inventory was just 4 pages long. My sponsor said, I don't want a book. She said, keep it short. And so, that's my experience, and my opinion is just do a shitty job. Just do whatever you can do. That's how I got through my college, actually, because my perfectionism was so intense. I had to say, just do a shitty paper. And so just do a few scrout. You know, I bet Bill Wilson didn't write, for God's sakes. So that's it.
Anybody else on the panel? Oh, good. You know, I want to say, I hear some people like, I write, and it works for some people. Every day they do this and that. I don't like writing either. When I do it, it really helps. But I don't do it often. You know, but when my back's against the wall, that's when I have to do it. There's a lot of things I do every day. You know, I read my OA books, and I meditate, and I pray. And there's some things every day I do. Writing is not something that, I just don't do it. So not everybody does the exact same way. Okay, if there's no other, there's one more.
I once got great solace and hope from writing on a 3x3 post-it note at work. Something came up that I felt very strongly. I was jealous, actually, of something that happened. And, you know, what can I do at this moment in the middle of the office that would help me through this? Relatively young, I took 3x3 and wrote very small, and the whole thing kind of calmed down until I could make a telephone call and take it somewhere else.
And I would say that it seems like you're more wrapped up in the effect, the end, the result, as opposed to the process. I think for us, the writing is the process. Just getting down. I mean, if I sit down and write thinking, oh, my God, there's going to be some result or there's going to be some end effect, it's just to get what's up here down here. And it's crazy up here. So when it's down there, it's crazy down there too. But at least I can see it on paper.
Okay, we have another person willing to ask from there.
Well, I feel nervous in the back of the room even. you know, I really appreciate all your shares. I'm just wondering, I've been in the program for a little while, but for somebody who's really new, it kind of didn't seem really clear about what they would do to get started, to get, you know, it's great to, like, I just don't eat, but, you know, as far as working the steps and finding a sponsor and things like that, I was just wondering if you could expand on that a little bit.
I went to my first meeting. I met two women that took me to my second meeting where I found a sponsor, and she guided me. So what I was told to do was write instead of eat. Unfortunately, I'm sorry, miss, but, you know, she said to write instead of eat. And to be honest with you, the pain was so bad that writing was easier than hurting myself anymore. So when the pain got bad enough, I told her I would walk on my knees and on glass if I had to, just to not have the pain of being so overweight. So that's my story. So I got a sponsor. I was guided. I was told what to eat. She told me breakfast, lunch, and dinner what I was to eat. And I just followed her, screaming and kicking the whole way, but I did it. And that's how I started. So I just took direction.
So for a new, my food, the way I eat, my abstinence is probably different than hers and hers. I mean, you know that there's so many different ways of defining abstinence. So for a newcomer, I would say, number one, go to as many meetings as you can. That's number one. There's just no surrogate for that. Number two, after the meeting, stick around and talk to people. Ask, may I please interrupt, and don't just barge in, because then people will not be very happy with you. You go to as many meetings as possible, you talk to people, and very soon, as far as your food is concerned, please be honest about what the truth, you know. I'm going to use Jack as an example. He's 3 moderate meals and nothing in between, and I was never a meal eater. That's not, you know, 3 moderate meals with nothing in between would have done nothing for me when I don't eat big meals. My problem was sugar. So be honest with what your food patterns are. You save everybody a lot of time. Go to a lot of meetings.
get direction. And I also want to say something about the lady in writing. It, not only is it getting what's in your head down, the more important thing is following your sponsor's instruction. You don't talk for the first year. But you don't know. For the first year, just don't talk. And just do what you're told to do. So that would be my instruction for the newcomer.
Oh, wait, Pacific Group.
I'd just like to respond. It's something I get from another 12-step meeting, the progenitor of Overeaters Anonymous. It was AA, Al-Anon, Gamblers Anonymous, and then came our meeting in Overeaters Anonymous. But if you can survive the fellowship, you probably got a good chance at abstinence.
It sounds like there's like, what's that? What's the magic that can make me stop eating and binging? And what is that magic pill? What is that magic solution? And I think for most of us, it's just, oh my God. Oh my God. I mean, two pieces of toast stopped me with my last binge. So, I mean, two pieces of toast just did me in. So I don't think there is going to be that, you're not going to hear this magic, oh, well, if you take, say, three prayers and one meditation at 6 o'clock in the morning, and then you do a prayer at 4, and then another prayer at 4:30, you're going to wake up the next day abstinent.
I mean, you were kidding when you told me to do that?
It works for you, but it won't work for most people.
Okay, we've got one here. How about many of you started before there was any OA literature? Only AA Big Book and 12 and 12. Has the proliferation of OA literature improved recovery in OA, worsened it, or no difference?
Yes.
Uh-oh. You go, girl. Go get him, Dan.
Worsened it? Yeah, it's my opinion. As Kathy Wilkinson would say, we can duke it out in the parking lot. But I don't use the OA literature. I only use AA. I mean, I always say I feel like the Pope when I'm saying this, like there could be no more orthodox person, and I came in as an atheist too, but there's one answer, and it's in the Big Book, and it's in the 12 and 12. Nobody has rewritten the answer to my program, so I don't use them. And I've seen and read, some of the books are nice, some of the stuff I read in there is nice, but I've seen some that goes directly opposite to what's in the Big Book. So that's where I stick. And by the way, there is magic in the program. It's the Big Book says action is the magic word. So.
Yeah, I just want to give a plug the opposite for OA literature. There was, first of all, there's always been OA literature. You know, Roseanne started writing OA literature, from the very beginning. It's just there wasn't books and, you know, but... it was my experience. I used the Big Book because there wasn't an OA book. But I've been fortunate to have traveled all over the world to OA, and especially in other countries. Once they started translating OA literature, all of a sudden meetings would start to like go up 10 times the amount, and people really started getting recovery. So, and I've seen it across all over the United States. So in LA, we were fortunate because we have a lot of meetings, a lot of strong OA started here. And I think it's a different experience. But I found that even though I didn't start because they didn't have it, when I read OA books, they speak to the compulsive overeater. So it's not a, if we read OA, we can't read the Big Book. The Big Book is the Big Book. But when I need to, and when a newcomer needs to relate to the food, the disease part, the disease is in our literature. And I think it's really important newcomers have that both and see it. And I've just seen in other areas where they do have it, what a difference OA literature has made.
I'd like to also say that if you stay around long enough, for real, you'll have the opportunity, or I've had the opportunity, Terrell, walking me through doing that writing and reading has had me go through the AA 12 and 12, and then when we were done, the OA 12 and 12, and then when we were done, the Big Book. And coincidentally, I'm sponsoring two guys now who are both finishing
at one point in the 12 and 12, the first 160, the big book, first 164 pages, and both of them know that as soon as they're done, we're going to pick up on the last of the three that they hadn't done yet. So one of them is going to go to the OA 12 and 12, and the other one's going to go to the AA. For me, if you're around long enough, there's no reason not to go over all of them, because it's all good. They speak to me differently. I'm not an alcoholic. So OA really speaks to me more so than the stories written by men after World War I or World War II, selling insurance and being on the road, without their families and kids. But the intensity of the disease and the intensity of the recovery of the AA literature has been magnificent. But the pages I most quote are AA literature. But the OA, I can relate to all the stuff that being a compulsive overeater. So it doesn't matter. And I agree with them who say you start where your sponsor suggests you start. And quite often it's just how they were walked through the steps is how I'm going to be walked through the steps and how I walk the steps through the steps with the guys that I sponsor. So,
I've benefited from all of them. And my regular meetings in Palm Springs, one does the AA big book and one does OA different books. So, I'm hungry for it all. But this is bringing up for me an issue that I'm going to share about, and I'm really nervous to share it. But when OA was 21 years old, I said, you know what? We have now become adults. It's time for us to take what we learned from our daddy, AA, and incorporate our own experience to develop more of our own unique thing. And for me, one of those things is I do not like the word abstinence in OA. I like to call it surrender versus abstinence. And there's a whole bunch of other issues around that. But I think AA has been great for us, and I'm in AA, and cool. But there's special things that we deal with in OA that I think we should celebrate our disease and our recovery.
Anyone else?
How about the gentleman at the mic?
Thank you. You have all sponsored many, many people, I'm sure. Let's pretend you're my sponsor. What warning signs would you give me, based on your experience of sponsoring others, what warning signs would you give me if you thought I was going to drop out of the program or relapse, or what types of things would you see from a sponsee before they relapsed or dropped out of the program?
Well, I know that if my sponsee's not following my direction, and I say, read this and get back to me, may I?
Yep.
3 years ago, I was going to fire him. He was not doing it. He was like, literally, he was saying he's going to make this commitment. He was going to read the big book. He was going to do this. Next day, nothing. Like, and then it got to the point where he knew I was going to fire him. And I said, okay, call me tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock.
7:03 and argue.
Right, and I tell him, you missed it. You're supposed to call at 7. I think it was between 6 and 7. I said, call between 6 and 7. It was between 6 and 7. And he called at 7:03. And I looked at him and said, no, this doesn't work. And he was like, well, what? You don't understand. I'm like, no, I understand completely. You either have a commitment to this program or you don't. You have a commitment to me as a sponsor or sponsoree. Because I said I was going to be available between 6 and 7. And if he's not considerate, fine. He was gone. He was being fired, literally that day. But he said, give him another chance. And I did. And he now does his homework 90% of the time. Yeah. Yeah. No.
No. No. It was a great line he doesn't remember saying, but I think he said. He said, you're going to program, but you're not working a program. And again, after I went through the obligatory, I wrote him like 25 emails. No, in my mind, I wrote him 25 emails, all which started with an F word. but I didn't send it. But he was right. I was still going to program. I never stopped going to meetings. But I wasn't working a program. And I think working a program, for me, is very important. It's getting my hands in there. It's everything from the service to taking direction, the extent to which I'm willing to surrender, kind of like the third step. And I don't make him my higher power, because the literature is very clear on that. But I do take direction because I've been very ego-driven in my life, and many of us have, and very, or fear-based, whatever the idiosyncratic reactions to life have been. But one way to move beyond that for me has been willing to take that direction. And more importantly than what specific things he tells me or doesn't tell me, it's to be willing to surrender and to learn and to grow on a daily basis. I think some of you were in the panel today when Don P. said his very often repetitive line of, and a wonderful one, you can't stay clean today in yesterday's shower. So to gloat about the past and all that I used to do in program is absolutely worthless, because it's like, what have you done for me lately? What have I done for my recovery today? What does it say? We get a daily reprieve, basically predicated upon keeping that fit spiritual condition. So if we don't keep it fresh and alive and dynamic, I run the risk of getting sloppy and all that comes with that.
I'd like to say something, if I could.
He has to be asleep soon. Please let him speak.
Well, since we're both the same gender, I'd like to just say that my sponsor, he's been my sponsor, Jim M., for 27 years. And in 27 years, I've never had a harsh word with Jim. He's been, come on, tears, back. It's just been a loving relationship all these years, and he's been through up, down, and all around with me. I'm lucky to be here, as I'm sure a lot of us are. I'm sponsoring a fellow right now. He's 2.5 months in the program. And he's been through about 5 different sponsors. The last 3 have fired him. And I have him call me every day, or he'll text me, let me know he's breathing. And the only suggestion I gave him was on doing his 4th step. I said, you can do it with your 5th with me or whoever you want to. But we set a date, and he postponed the date twice. And he called me the last time, and I think I was late for dinner or something, but I was in a testy mood. And I said, you know, if you don't get it done by the end of January, get somebody else. You know, he was in the way of my dinner. He just caught me at a bad time. But as I say, if you can survive the fellowship here, you're going to do just fine.
Okay, we got to, let's see. Oh, yeah, please.
Oh, okay. I just want to respond to you. What I give my, we're supposed to share our experience, strength, and hope. And what I do is I have my sponsees do what I do. So if they're not willing, what I tell them is I'll be happy to be, you know, have coffee with you and talk to you, but I'm not going to spend the time if you're not willing to do the work. I was taught early in the program that I'm not to ever, as a sponsor, work harder than the person I'm sponsoring. So if they want what I have, they have to do what I do. It's just simple as that. I'm a busy person. My life got really big when I got abstinent. I got smaller and my life got bigger. And that's the way it is. So I lovingly tell them that. And if they don't want to do it, I still will love them. But I'm not going to take their calls once a week to hear excuses. It just, life is too, you know, it's just a finite amount of time for us, and I just don't want to do that. And I find that I have really willing sponsees. You know, I sponsor a man. You know, he started out 400 pounds. He calls every day. And so the gender thing, I don't know. I don't know. It works out fine for us. So, but it takes a willingness to be in this program and to heal. But it's easier than being in the food.